It's Monday, June 8th, and this is Israel in 10, the Misgav Daily Brief. I'm Laura Sellier in Tel Aviv. Israel's war cabinet has been meeting with the IDF, warning that it is prepared for a full return to war with Iran. It comes after the first direct attacks since a ceasefire was brokered 2 months ago. I'll be discussing that with analyst Saul Sadka in just a moment, but first the headlines. President Trump has posted on social media that Israel and Iran must stop shooting at each other. This shortly after the IDF announced it was preparing for several days of fighting with Iran and a possible full resumption of war. Iran has fired at least 20 ballistic missiles at Israel over the past 12 hours. All were intercepted or fell into open areas. Schools are closed and restrictions have been imposed on public gatherings. The IDF says it's working in full cooperation with the U.S. Central Command CENTCOM. The IDF also intercepted a missile that was fired overnight by Yemen's Houthis. Israel has carried out two major waves of airstrikes on Iran. The Air Force targeted multiple sites, including one of the country's most important petrochemical facilities, the Marshah plant. It marks the first strike on Iranian energy infrastructure since the ceasefire was announced in April. Fires and explosions have been reported in Tehran, Isfahan and Tabriz. The IRGC says it's prepared for any scenario, including a war on multiple fronts. It claims its missile attacks on Israel were a response to Israeli strikes on Hezbollah's Beirut stronghold, the Dahiya district, on Sunday. Yemen's Houthis have announced what they describe as a complete and total ban on Israeli maritime navigation in the Red Sea, warning that all Israeli-linked vessels will be considered legitimate military targets. Until last night, the Houthis had largely stayed out of this round of fighting. Alongside the Strait of Hormuz, the Bab el-Mandeb is one of the world's most important maritime choke points, linking trade routes between Asia, Europe and the United States. Delayed talks on Gaza have begun in Cairo. Mediators from Egypt, Qatar and Turkey are meeting with Palestinian factions, including Hamas, in an effort to move forward with the second phase of the ceasefire. Hamas has repeatedly said it will not disarm before a full Israeli withdrawal from Gaza. And finally, winds of change in Slovenia. The country has lowered the Palestinian flag that had been flying over government headquarters. The newly re-elected Prime Minister, Janez Janša, says Slovenia will now pursue a more reasonable foreign policy based on facts and national interests. Under the previous government, Slovenia had become one of Israel's fiercest critics in Europe. Before we get to today's conversation, a quick reminder, you can sponsor Israel in 10. Just drop us a line at misgavdailybrief@gmail.com. Now here's Saul Sadka. Did Prime Minister Netanyahu defy President Trump by striking Iran?
Well, technically, if you listen to the things that have been said in public, then yes, because Trump said don't attack. And who knows, we're expecting him to wake up in a few hours. And maybe he will wake up and post something attacking Netanyahu for doing exactly what he did. But you have to take all of that, in my opinion, as noise. We have seen this cycle of discussion and fights between the two of them going back. And we've seen the same cycle all the time. We saw it before the previous war a year ago. The same kind of rumors, and everyone was saying Trump and Netanyahu were falling out and there's never going to be an attack on Iran. And then at the moment that no one really expected it, there was an attack on Iran. Somehow, the Israelis and the Americans managed on the 28th of February at 8 a.m. to surprise the Iranians. Isn't that incredible? How did they do that? Well, it's because they've been building up to it for a week with all sorts of misinformation, all sorts of rumors about Netanyahu and Trump falling out over the details. And so when it finally came, they weren't prepared. They weren't expecting it at that particular time. You can't be on maximum alert constantly. The same is true now. That's my belief. And you have to think it also from the perspective of Trump. So what does Trump really want? Trump wants the IRGC to go away. They have tried to kill him a number of times. They're trying to kill his daughter. These are people who he has personal beef with. So he's very happy that the Israelis killed Khomeini and many other of the leaders. If you notice, by the way, all the assassinations, as far as I can tell, were done by the Israelis, not by the Americans. The Americans were quite happy to let the Israelis do that for them. But going back to what's happening today, the situation is that Trump wants to have a deal, because a deal that brings back the uranium is really enough for the United States. That can be presented as a victory, and that's all Trump needs.
It's purely the nuclear stuff now, isn't it?
That's true. Although I think if you really go back to Trump's words right from the beginning, there really was no talk about regime change, because regime change was always something for the future. In the end, the IRGC and the various military and paramilitary forces underneath it make up more than 1 million men with weapons. That is a lot of people. That is a real army. It's a vast army, and the only way to really disarm them is to cut off the money. If they're not getting their salaries, then they have a chance of overcoming those kind of people. The IRGC also has the ability, as they did in January, to bring in mercenaries from Iraq and from Syria. It's very hard to dislodge a regime like that. Of course, if they would have got a nuclear weapon, and they were certainly able to do so had the Israelis and the Americans not intervened, not only would it have been a great danger for the entire world, but it would mean that the people of Iran would never be free.
So where do you think we are now, Saul? Was last night and this morning a skirmish, or are we headed back to all-out war?
Oh, I wish I knew. I think you can't do a deal with a regime like the IRGC because they simply really don't view peace as the goal. They want chaos. There are parts of the IRGC who might be pragmatists. We don't really know if they're faking it. But there are others who definitely would like to go down with the ship. They would be quite happy to see Iran burn to the ground if it means that the prophecies that they truly believe in will come true. And people don't take religious people seriously. They imagine that because they live in a Western society with Western values, that those people don't really surely believe it. You never know who you're negotiating with, and you never know if the people you're negotiating with who actually signed the deal will be able to enforce that deal, or it will descend into factionalism, and you'll be making a deal with one part of the IRGC, and another part of the IRGC will still be fighting. All of these things are possible, so we don't know how it's going to end up. But I would say this. I would say that from Israel's perspective, the fact that the IRGC still exists, and the fact that even its proxies still exist, Hamas still exists. It still controls the population of Gaza. Hezbollah still exists. It's still a major pain on the northern border, and it has destroyed Lebanon over 40 years to the extent that Lebanon has gone from being one of the richest places in the Middle East to one of the poorest. It's gone from being one of the most happy, joyous vacation places in the world to the third most miserable place in the world after only Yemen and Afghanistan. That is all on the IRGC and the Hezbollah army. But what you have to understand is that those armies are no longer really a strategic threat to Israel. They are a nuisance. They can occasionally kill people, once in a while, maybe. But they are no longer a threat of an invasion. They were put there by Iran due to the mistakes of Israel. When Ehud Barak pulled out in the hopes of a Nobel Peace Prize in the year 2000, he pulled out all the troops from Lebanon. The very next day, Hezbollah were literally planting their flag on the Israeli border. And since that day, over 25 years, the Iranians have funded Hezbollah to build them up, to dig tunnels all over the place over there, under every Shia village, fill them with weapons, to make sure that that place could always be used as a weapon against Israel. But they didn't really want it to be used as a weapon. Ditto, the same thing happened in Gaza. What did they want? They wanted these two armies on one side and on the other side to Israel. They didn't want those armies to attack Israel. They wanted to sit there to prevent Israel from attacking Iran. But the problem was that Sinwar didn't get the message, because Sinwar thought he had this mighty army that was going to conquer Jerusalem. And if he started the war, everybody was going to join him, and Israel will be defeated. Iran is now falling apart and is no longer really a strategic threat to Israel. They are, however, a strategic threat to the Gulf countries. Even if the war would end tomorrow with a deal that gets the uranium out, which Trump has made very clear is his red line, that would mean that the Iranian regime would sit there. They can't really hurt Israel. All these lies that we're seeing coming out of Washington and Israel, all these games, most of this stuff, including the conversations that happened last night between Trump and Barak Ravid and Trey, all those conversations most likely were there to get the oil price down. Of all the provocations that Iran could have used as an excuse to attack Israel over the past few months, the one bomb in Beirut yesterday wasn't special. They did it yesterday because the new trading week was about to start. They wanted to do the opposite of what Trump has been doing. Trump has always been trying to attack on the weekends, so to minimize the oil shock. So they tried the opposite. That's probably what happened to him.
Something a little different, because you are also a scholar of the Tanakh, the Jewish Bible. Can you give us a few words of wisdom at this very uncertain time?
I'll tell you this much. I was walking yesterday as the sun was setting along the beach with my dog in Tel Aviv, and I don't remember it so full of people ever. So here we are in the middle of a war. The economy is thriving. And there are so many people that you can barely move. I recall the words of Isaiah 2,600 years ago, who told us exactly this. He promised that one day this land will be full of people And you don't need to be a religious person to look back and read those words that were written down by a prophet, a leader of the Jews in Jerusalem so many years ago. And we get to see it with our own eyes. And we get to see all the people who come to attack us, strewn across the battlefield. It's a very lucky time to be a Jew in the world.
That's it. That's your Israel in 10. Thanks for watching, and do subscribe using the link below. Goodbye.